Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the High Vibe Tribe podcast. I am Marcy Newman, your host, and I have a wonderful, wonderful guest with us today, all the way from Toronto, Robert Lindsay Milne. Robert, so welcome. Thank you for being here.
I'm so excited. When I found out I was going to be on with you, I got so excited. I asked Michelle, are you sure I'm spiritual enough to be on this program?
Well, I believe that the spirit moves us wherever we need to be.
Yes.
And your spirit is magnificent.
Thank you. I've seen
your light, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yes. And I'd love to tell our audience a little bit more about you and why I was just as excited to have you today. So listen up, everybody. Robert is really one of those child prodigies. He was reading tea leaves before he could speak English. As I said, he's from Toronto and he's a native. And he talks about his humble beginnings as a 19-year-old, you're going to love this, hippie psychic working at a tea house. But he has since grown to become recognized across the continent as one of the most insightful, psychic, intuitive counselors of his time. Now, everybody just take a moment and take that in. Psychic, intuitive counselor. Sounds just the kind of counselor that you or I would love to speak with, right? So I know that you'll be fascinated by his work. And he talks also about his work with a coma patient. And I hope you'll tell us more about this, Robert, but how he was able to help cure a very deadly superbug that had caused this infection. And actually, Robert was featured in this book entitled The Perfect Predator. So as I said, Robert is a psychic intuitive counselor, a teacher, a healer, and a life coach. He, of course, is perfect for the High Vibe Tribe. And what I want to know, Robert, is this.
Yes.
When you started at such a young age.
Yes.
Were you at the time able to embrace your gifts, and were you able to overtly like come forward and share those gifts with people?
Absolutely. Now, I actually started working at that tea room when I was 15 and a half years old. And I had been living on the street, and I was living and surviving by my intuition and my psychic ability. And I heard that if you worked at the Cozy Tea Room, it was a famous place in Toronto. It was a dump, by the way, but it was a famous place where you could get tea leaf readings. I applied at the Cozy Tea Room. The date was January 17th, 1965. I was 15 and a half. I went there, I applied, I did a reading for the owner, and I started working there that day. But I must digress. I was consciously aware of psychic things from the time I can remember. Mm. I can remember one time coming home from school. It might have been kindergarten or grade one. And I said to my mother, Grandma Harris died today. My mother got very, very upset. She yelled and probably hit me. And she said, stop saying such bad things. Hmm. Grandma Harris actually was my great-grandmother who lived in London, England, and I lived in Canada. I'd only seen her once in my entire life. I was about five or six when I said that. The next evening at dinner, my mother and father were there, my sister and I. And at dinner, my mother said to my father, Grandma Harris died yesterday. And I thought my father was going to get angry with my mother for saying bad things. And to my astonishment, they just talked about it. And that's one of the most confusing things that I had as a child. Those types of things occurred where I would say something, often get hit or chastised at least. And then later on, it would happen. And then the adults would talk about it.
It's interesting that you noticed their reaction was one of such fear initially. And, it's interesting to me.
My goodness, I'd never seen it that way before. Thank you. That's exactly what I saw. Wow. Can I stay here? Can I keep talking? This is great.
Of course. Thank you. But that's what was shown to me immediately. They reacted with so much fear that they had no idea how to respond to you because they were stuck in the reaction. And that actually was what I was thinking about when I was thinking about your bio and the fact that you were so little when you started to read tea leaves. I'm wondering, how did you ever cross that gap between recognizing that you had these incredible abilities and the people around you and their inability to accept you and to embrace that?
Well, it's a grandiose experience. Oh, from the time I talked with you about these things I said to about my great grandma Harris, I would also say, Uncle Charlie, that wasn't Aunt Sally you were with, and that one got me into serious trouble.
You were a troublemaker.
I didn't realize because I was six. 7 years old. Okay, so so in Canada, hockey is the thing, and being in Toronto, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and my father was a huge Toronto fan, which made me a huge Toronto fan. I was 9 years old, and my dad took me to a Stanley Cup hockey game, semifinal, Boston and Toronto. The game was tied 1-1. The series was tied 1-1, by the way. And the game was tied 1-1 at the end of the third period. At the beginning of the first overtime period, the teams came on to stretch just to kind of warm up a bit. I became attracted to number 17 with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And his name was Gary Eamon. He was a mediocre hockey player, mediocre hockey player playing in the best league in the world.
Right.
Okay. So, but he wasn't a star. I knew he was going to score. The game hadn't started. I knew, and it was so real. It was like he scored. And I contained myself. I looked around, nobody seemed to be paying attention. And then, the referee blew the whistle and the teams went to the bench. Eamon wasn't a starter. As the referee got ready to drop the puck, and imagine here is Maple Leaf Gardens. There's 18,000 people. They turn the lights down. The entire building is quiet. The referee is about to drop the puck. And I believe Gary Eamon has just scored. And I jump up and start screaming and cheering in this silent building. The entire building looked at me and my dad. and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "Sit down." And the referee dropped the puck. The game started. I then looked around and realized nobody knew that Gary Eamon was going to score.
Wow.
And then Eamon came on the ice. A fella named Red Kelly passed the puck to him, and Eamon tipped the puck into the net, scored the overtime goal, and Maple Leaf Gardens erupted.
Wow.
People screamed, cheered, the cameras went off, and I just sat back and looked around and said to myself, other people think differently than me. And that was when I knew what I was going to do. with my life. At that point, that was what I knew I was going to do.
Robert, if we could back up just a little bit.
Sure.
I'm so curious, at such a young age, how did you know you could read tea leaves? I mean, it's not a typical thing that, you know, we get to talk about. How did you?
I have a secret for you.
Oh, good.
I have a confession. I have never read a tea leaf in my life. Okay. I have absolute, well, they look like little blobs of gunk in the bottom of the cup.
Okay.
But I had been living on the street. It was winter time. Now, the first time I ran away from home, I was about 14 and a half. And I spent the winter time surviving in an alleyway in downtown Toronto. I survived in those days by my pure instinct, intuition, and psychic ability. Wow. My skills, my intuition, my psychic awareness have been developed under the pressure of survival. And and you see, I didn't learn to read and write until I was in my late teens. I was functionally illiterate. So and I survived by my instincts, my intuition. And when I was on the street, no matter what, I was always given an option when there were problems or when I got into trouble. And when children are on the street, they get into trouble a lot. I was always given options. And by the way, I've always been looked over. I don't mean physically looked over, but I mean I've been protected. But I've always had to solve my issues. So I've always had the option of solving the problem using my instinct, my intuition, my psychic ability, or an immoral or illegal way. I almost always chose the psychic, intuitive way. There were times where I did an immoral, although never illegal action. And there were things that a child has to do in a blizzard to stay alive.
Sure.
However, there was no right or wrong in these situations. What happened though is, depending upon how I solved the issue, directed me in how my life would go.
You know, you bring up such an interesting point that I would like to talk about a little bit, because it actually came up in conversation earlier for me today. And that is how in certain situations, right or wrong is variable. And what you're describing, particularly in terms of being a young guy, you know, living on the streets, thank God, first of all, that you had that incredible ability to guide and direct you, right? So your intuition, your psychic abilities, and what must have also been just a keen awareness of people and people's nature, because those survival skills and the fact that you're here talking to us today, mm-hmm. now as this internationally known psychic and healer, think about how remarkable that is, everyone in the audience. Think about the power of intuition, the power of utilizing all of the information that our senses bring in, and how incredibly you have honed in on all of that. I'm really blown away by this.
I have to tell you, Marcy, I get blown away.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a leader, and I'm not a follower. I'm not really a group person. What I focus on is the person or the being in front of me. I can't feed the world. I can feed the hungry person in front of me. I can help that being. That's what I focus on more than in a group. So I'm an individual. I work and live on my own, and I'm focused on giving service, and often is for the person in front of me. That's how I see things. Anyway, I don't know why I said that, but
I think it's all connected. I mean, this is what I'm seeing too, you know, how important this message is, because your time on the streets, and obviously even before you were there, you had to have carried this with you, your ability to be in the moment and the power of that. And as I said, you know, to recognize that there is no right or wrong when it comes to spirit, first of all. Right. And how essential it is that, particularly when you're giving readings and working as a healer and a guide, to put aside that judgment. And it sounds to me like you have just had the most remarkable development based on that ability to survive from that place, where you were able to recognize whatever the situation calls for, you determined what was right and what was wrong for you.
That's correct. Yes. And I have carried that in my work. For example, what is right or what is wrong? I guarantee my readings. I guarantee them absolutely. Now, hear how absolutely I guarantee them. Okay. I guarantee that when I do a reading for someone, from the moment I do the reading until the end of their life or mine, and preferably theirs, if there is ever a time my client feels that the service they got from me was not of value, you tell me and I'll give you back your money. And I don't care if it was a reading I did for you 40 years ago. I'm not giving you back today's money but I'll pay you back. I'll give you back 40 years ago's money.
Sure.
Okay. And that's just the way it is. And there's no questions asked. And simply, I apologize.
That's a remarkable guarantee. I don't think I've ever heard that before from anyone, including myself.
Yes. Okay. Well, I do
so
that.
So you're amazing.
I do that because I want to prove, and incidentally, except for when I do online readings, which is now a whole almost all the time, but up until doing online readings and when people come to see me in person, they never pay me at first, ever. And at the end of the reading, when I give them their recording, and I've been recording readings since the mid-1970s.
Oh my God.
Whenever it's time, you know, I give them their reading, and then I ask them if they would, you know, if they'll pay me, and if they say no, they have to give me back the tape, of course. But they always have the right of refusal. And if there is ever a time when I'm doing a reading for somebody, and I don't think I'm doing my best work, I'll stop and tell them and apologize. Or there have been times where I've done a whole reading for somebody, and I'll say, oh, I'm sorry, this is just not my best work. I'm sorry, there's no charge. If you'd like, we can make another appointment. And then there are times where someone comes to me and I'm not able to do a reading. Now, that's a low percentage. I've done more than 100,000 psychic connections in my life.
Good Lord.
So where we've jumped around so much. When I started working at the Tea Room, I worked 5 and sometimes 6 days a week doing readings, the way I would do readings, because I could never read tea leaves, I would just simply hold the tea leaf or hold a teacup in front of me and look at the person, and then I would tune into them and do a psychic reading.
I love-
that answer And then what I would do, because you had to do tea leaf and card reading, then I would just take the deck of cards and I just put the cards on the table. Even I was a kid, I was a good talker. So I would put the cards down and I would just tell a story about the cards at the same time, work it in with what I found about them psychically. Well, so that's how I did it in the tea rooms.
And I mean, it just sounds like it helped you to develop everything that you needed to develop.
By the time I was about 21, because I worked at the tea room from about 15 to around 21, I had done thousands of readings.
Amazing. Really amazing. And they must have been like so right on for them to have kept you on for such a long time.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was one of the more popular readers. I'm a psychic now. One of the more popular readers within the first 6 months that I was there. Remember, I was a kid, like 15, 16. And the people that I was working with, well, they seemed 100, but they were significantly older than me.
Wow.
And the people who came to me were old enough to be my mother, father, grandmother. Mm. But I was the barefoot hippie reader.
I love it. Yeah. I have this whole vision of you. It's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. So tell me something. Yes. Robert, do you think that anybody or everybody, I should say, has the same capability? Or do you think that this is a special gift that's unique to you?
Everybody, almost everybody has the ability to be psychic, to be intuitive. So in saying almost everybody, let us imagine a bell-shaped curve. So at one end of the spectrum, or at one end of the edge of the bell-shaped curve, there is one person that has absolutely zero intuitive awareness. Then you follow that bell-shaped curve to the other end, and then there's another person that is absolutely 100%. And then the rest of us are all somewhere in between. Psychic ability, intuition, has nothing to do with being spiritual. Sure. Being psychic is an instinct that all mammals have. Have you ever been sitting somewhere and then you just look up and see that someone is looking at you? Or that you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you turn, you see someone's just driving by and they made eye contact with you, or that you were thinking of a friend you hadn't seen for a while and the phone rings or the texts come in and that's that person. That's all being psychic.
Sure.
That's the beginning. So when I teach people to be psychic, I used to teach a seminar, a one-day seminar. And in that workshop, I would take a group of people and I did it for about 20 years, where the biggest group was a little over 300 and the smallest was 10. And in that day, that one day, I would take a group of people and I would guarantee them, and they would be doing psychic readings for strangers, no medium, look and stand in front of somebody and say, this is what I see for you. Do that in the class. And if you do as I show you, you will be psychic. And so it simply is becoming aware of what's obvious. Mm. So when you're going to do a reading for somebody or do something, become aware of what's obvious. So you look at the person, look at them and see them who see their eyes, see their hair, see their face, see how they sit, see just feel them. When you see them and you see what is obvious, then more becomes obvious about them and your awareness expands. And when you focus on what's obvious, then more becomes obvious again. And until as you open your awareness, you start taking control of that instinct, that intuition, directing it and focusing it, you start seeing more and more and more until you get to a point that's what's obvious Gary Eamon has scored in overtime. To me, it was obvious, but to others, it was not obvious at all. And that is how we do it. And then we, after that, if you really want to do it, because right around age 21, because there were several times in my life where I, you know, restated my vows of, you know, what I was going to do. And at around 21, I decided this was what I was going to do. I was going to be doing readings forever. And I believed that I had to make it a commitment, a life commitment. And I had heard that if a young man, when a young man becomes becomes an ordained priest, he makes a vow to say a mass every day of his life. So I decided that this was my calling and I was going to dedicate my life to it. So I made a vow that I would either do a psychic reading or I would practice being psychic every day of my life.
Mm.
And I lived up to that vow for a little over 30 years.
Wow.
And then I missed a day.
You missed a day?
Yeah. You know why?
You want to talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. I wanted to know what it felt like not to do it.
Was that even possible for you?
It was gut-wrenching. Well, the equivalent would be walking around, you know, with your eyes closed.
Yeah.
And you know, there have been times in my life where I burned out or I got tired or and for a brief moment I lost it. And it was more being tired. I don't know how normal people that, or people that don't develop their psychic ability, I don't know how you survive.
Tell me something.
Yes.
I just had this thought, like when you were describing the workshop that you had been giving and you mm-hmm. Were taking them through the process, right, mm-hmm. of noticing the person yeah. before you, et cetera. Right. Are you actually reading that person's mind or
you can't read people's mind. What you can do is read people's body language. Okay, there's something different than reading body language and reading somebody's mind's different. So for example, knowing what somebody is feeling, an emotion will show in the body language, you won't know why they're feeling that emotion.
Okay,
you'll understand, you can see the emotion, but you don't know the reason why they have that emotion or why they're reacting the way they mm-hmm. are. Okay, now, I just would like to stop here for a moment. And when I say about becoming aware of what's obvious, my abilities then continue to expand and my sense of looking into the future, my sense of looking into the past, because it's obvious to me, because I've done it 100,000 times, it's not obvious to very many people on the planet.
Mm.
However, it's there and anyone can get to it if they want to focus on it. If they, you know, this woman one time went to Itzhak Perlman, you know, the famous violinist. And she said, "Mr. Perlman, I would give my life to play the violin like you." And he said, "I have, madam."
Mm.
Oh, well, pardon? Yes. Well,
that's interesting.
And it hasn't been all glory. I crawled up and I've had really high highs and I've had really low lows and I've been very successful and I've been very much a failure, but I've always been a psychic.
Mm.
And I've always done really good psychic work no matter what. You get me excited, Marcy.
You know,
you bring it out at me. Wow.
Actually, I was just sort of getting a visual
yes.
about your timeline,
yes.
right? And how everything came together, even including the, the challenges that you had with your literacy at Absolutely. Such a vulnerable age.
Absolutely. Right?
And being out in the world on your own, on yeah. the streets,
yeah.
how it has enhanced your ability to discern, how it's enhanced your ability to really pick up, different energetic
yes.
prompts and et cetera. But one of the things that must be this true like nature of your gift is I have to come back to that moment where in the hockey game, you transcended time. You already knew that it was happening.
And oh, yes.
that you were actually in that moment. Ooh, I'm getting what I call God bumps. That you were in that moment, Robert, you were already in the other timeline. You were already in that other, what should we say? You had gone through a portal. You were in a different time reference because you already knew it had happened.
Right. Now that was at the, so remember, I'm in June, I turned 72. So we're talking about something that happened at age 9.
Sure.
So I'm much more sophisticated in my processing. What I was seeing was obvious to me. It was very, very clear. Yet at the same time, because it was something that was in the future, I didn't see it as the future. I saw it as now, but exactly. I also was in the now of yeah. the game being started. So it was like, imagine a wall with television screens, and in this case, let's say two, one where the game is about to start and the other one is filming how the game is being played 2 minutes into the future. Both are playing at the same time and I saw them that way.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Robert.
Yes.
That's what I think is so unique about what you're describing, because you actually transcended time as yeah. we would know it. You were already in another, you might Zone. Say, time frame,
yes.
right? And yeah. had already seen it. And I can't help but wonder if this doesn't have an effect on how you read for people today. Are you able to see past, present, and future for people?
At the same time. So when I'm doing a reading for someone, I often see their life. I actually feel their energy from conception all the way to the completion of their existence. Now, I don't spend a lot of time at either end of that spectrum, although there are times that I do. More times at the beginning of someone's life, more so than at the end of someone's life. But I go, and the main focus of someone's reading, nonetheless, is where they are now, where they've been in the last little while, where they're going to be going. And when I'm doing a reading for someone, I'm constantly moving backward and forward in time. So I sometimes get lost. So at the beginning, the way I start every single reading, because there's a method for my madness. I'll start off doing a reading for somebody. This is Thursday, February, whatever today is, 2021 psychic reading for Mary Brown by Robert Lindsay Milne in Toronto. I start off giving the person's name, my name, the date of the session. Then I then ask the person, how old are you today? Like years, and what month is your next birthday? Then I start. Here we are today in February, 2021. What I'm going to be discussing with you today generally is, and I start like that. And constantly throughout the reading, I'm going back and forth in time and I'm using today's date or the person's age to keep me locked or anchored into this timeline. because I'm going way into the future and back and then into the past. And sometimes I can get confused. So I'm constantly doing that, doing it like that. When I'm doing a reading, this is fun doing this. I don't get the opportunity to discuss these this way. The people just want to know, how'd you learn to be psychic? Thank you for letting me talk about this.
I love it.
So when I'm tuning into somebody, I also ask them, please don't interrupt me, because the readings I do are a monologue, not a dialogue. And what I do is I just talk about the person and the information comes through. If you interrupt me, and by the way, I don't ask questions either. Yeah, two questions. How old are you? When's your next birthday? And if I do, in the midst of a reading, I ask a question, it usually requires a yes or no answer. The other thing is, I don't want to know anything about somebody before I do the reading. When I see that person, I want to see them fresh and start right from there with no prejudgment, nothing. So often when I am doing a reading and I say, like I'm talking about something, what I'm saying isn't necessarily what I'm thinking about. What I'm saying has already been processed and is in the process of being expressed. What I'm thinking about is what I've said before that, what I may say now, and what I might want to do after I'm doing the reading, all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And using the example of the TV screens, imagine four TV screens and one playing a video of right this moment, another one playing a video that happened a minute and a half in the future, and another one a minute and a half in the past. Mm-hmm. And then another one, I can say, okay, where am I doing? Where would I like to have lunch today? All at the same time. Now, if something really serious goes on in the reading, I'm not thinking about what I'm doing for lunch. I'm thinking about what's happening right now, though.
Yeah.
But
still, what you're describing is an incredibly expansive consciousness.
Is it?
That is an expansive consciousness to be able to take in all of that information, which essentially is on different vibrational frequencies, and bring it in and deliver a message that is of great importance. Are you ever wrong?
Yep. Really?
I love your honesty, Robert.
Are you kidding? You bet. And let me tell you something. I walk the floors at night. About things that I said that would be wrong. No one is 100%. Nobody does their job perfectly. That's why I guarantee my work. I guarantee when I do a reading for somebody that I will give them my absolute best in that moment in time. Mm. And if it didn't turn out to be the best, I'm really sorry. Let me make it up. Here's your money back.
Amazing,
that's why when I I hate doing that.
Of course you do.
I hate it. You have no idea, so it is true. I really, it's because but my reputation is that when I say something to somebody, because of my reputation, they know that I'm giving them the best that I can do in the moment. And if it turns out that I didn't give them the best, I'll make it right.
I think that's really so incredible and quite unusual. So I have to ask, do you have a spiritual practice?
No.
Okay.
That's why I said to Michelle, am I spiritual enough to be on this program? Because I grew up on the street. I was indoctrinated by a beautiful prostitute who was like 10 or 12 years older than me. She was really old. You know, I was 15 and she might have been 25. I got looked after and cared for. And when I left the tea room, you know, that was the only way in those days to make a living. I was living at this Fleabag hotel, and I paid my rent at that time. And then after getting fired or quit for the 50th time at the tea room, I decided that my tea room days was over and that I was going to strike out on my own. And I went from getting, you know, like $2.50 a reading to $5 a reading. And my clients, the people that came to me were drug addicts and pimps and prostitutes and street people and you know, dock workers and all those types of and other hippies and artists and I immediately fell behind in my rent. And then at the hotel there was an older guy. And I was really friendly with this fella, and he worked four nights a week on the front desk, the midnight shift, and he died, not at work, but at home. And when I heard that Whitey died, I went to the owner of the hotel, and I said to him, could I take Whitey's job, but in exchange for room and board, I would do that job. So I started working at the hotel, Larry's Hideaway, in exchange for room and board. And I worked four nights a week. And that was when I started to learn to read. Because I didn't have to worry about paying rent. I had a place, I was safe. And after doing that for a couple of weeks, I went to a local library. And I was 21 at the time or something. And I went to a local library and told the librarian that I couldn't read very well. And could she recommend a book? And she did. And I started reading because the, you know, the hotel in Toronto in those days, you know, the city got turned off at midnight, 1 o'clock on Saturdays. And Larry's Hideaway had like daily patrons and people that rented rooms by the hour. And then there were like weekly people that, you know, were often the single working men or women. And after about midnight, 1 in the morning till about 7, I wouldn't see anybody. And I got the opportunity to practice and learn to read and to learn to write. That's where I learned. That's how I did it.
Amazing. Really amazing. And, you know, that you gave yourself that opportunity to, you know, to finally have the time to put into it is fantastic. Again, so amazing. What a background you have.
Thank you, Marcy.
Yeah, really. I'm so thrilled to have you here. I need to ask you,
yes.
Who is Dr. Stephanie Strathdy and Dr. Tommy Patterson, and what do they have to do with you?
Well, all right. So Stephanie Strathdy is a longtime client of mine, and she got her first reading from me when she finished her PhD in epidemiology. Tom Patterson is Stephanie's husband. Mm. I have been doing readings for Stephanie, I guess maybe 30 years. I've done a few readings for her husband, Tom. So Stephanie now is a prominent epidemiologist. She is a professor of epidemiology at the Southern California University. She's associate dean of the epidemiology department. She is like got a whole list of universities that she's affiliated with, and Time Magazine has declared her in the top 50 best greatest contributors to science in the year that we found the cure to Tom's superbug.
Wow.
Tom, her husband, is a professor of experimental psychology at the University of Southern California. He also, of course, has a PhD. He also has a PhD in psychiatry, and does research into medications, things like that. And he and Stephanie, over the last 10-year period, have done extensive HIV research on the border of Mexico and California. These people are brilliant scientists. They come to me for readings. It's amazing. It blows my mind. And when it just makes me laugh. Anyway, Tom and Stephanie, and by the way, I need a few minutes to tell you this story. So I know these people because I've known them for doing reading for years. Doesn't mean I know them personally. I just know them by a snapshot when I connect to them. Mm. And then after I've connected with them, they're gone from my consciousness. So Tom, and I could describe Tom as an old Indiana Jones kind of guy.
Okay.
And Tom is like 6'5". He's a researcher. He goes out in the jungle at two different times in the 1970s on a research tour. He was kidnapped by the Sandinistas and he came near starving to death. He's like this wilderness guy, and he come back, right? Just, so he's like that. But Tom in his older age ballooned up to over 300 pounds. Mm. The year before all this happened, I did a reading for him and I warned him about an upcoming illness, a problem. And I worded it with him like this. And this is how I presented it to him. I said, you know, Tom, at such and such an age, I see that you've lost more than 100 pounds. I see that. However, before that, I also see a really serious illness, and a serious illness so serious that you cannot get sicker without dying.
Ooh,
and nice. You will, and you're going to lose at least 100 pounds. And then I said to him, Tom, I'm not sure what the destiny is. I'm pretty sure that you're going to survive this and lose 100 pounds. Maybe this issue is you have the choice. If you pay attention to your health now and lose 100 pounds, you won't get sick. I think it's up to you, and it's up to you, Tom. You can do it the easy way. You can do it the hard way. But at this age in your life, you're going to be 100 pounds lighter. And that's how I said it to him. And I was very direct. I'm not always like that, but this was an important, I was a lot softer than that. I would never deliver that information to somebody the way I just did with you. That was much more
direct.
Yeah, I am direct, but not quite like that.
Okay.
Mm. I'm a lot more sensitive than that. But I said those words nonetheless. Following year, and by the way, scared the hell out of Tom for a week, you know, and he lived on salads and stuff, and then that was over. So a year later, Tom and Stephanie go away on their dream vacation. They go to Egypt to go into the pyramids. Tom gets really sick when they get to when he gets all these problems in his stomach when he gets to Egypt. He goes into the pyramid and then literally falls down, just about faints. He drags himself up out of the pyramid and stuff. And in the hotel that night, he gets really sick and to the point of, I guess, delirious. Stephanie rushes him to the hospital in Egypt. And while being treated at the hospital in Egypt, he contracts the most potent superbug on the planet. The superbug is 100% antibiotic resistant. It means that when you get that superbug, you die. That's what it means. Tom was medevaced, because they had great insurance, from Egypt to Germany, as was Stephanie. I knew there was something seriously going wrong with Tom and Stephanie at that time. I could sense it. I could feel it. Although I very seldom reach out. People have to reach out to me, and then I'd reach back. It's because of my boundaries, Marcy. It's because of my boundaries. I have no right to go up to somebody and say, you know, I need to help you. Yeah, you know, okay. Oh, okay. I just wanted to see. Okay. That's why I did that. So, in Germany, Stephanie finally remembered to call me. And when I answered, this is in the book, by the way, when I answered, it was on Skype. And I just said to her, I've been waiting for you. What took you so long? And because I knew something had serious had happened. She told me what had happened. And from that time, I made a mental link with Tom. And I knew when Tom was in a coma, what he was going through, what he was experiencing. I knew that he could live because I saw his life force like a candle. And when the candle flame was strong, even though he was in a coma, even though he had a cyst, a pseudocyst on his pancreas and a superbug somewhere in his body, this flame was strong. I knew he wasn't going to die.
Amazing.
I also knew that when the flame flickered, he needed help. But he also was unconscious and delirious. Now, I had that mental link with Tom, and he writes about it in the book too, by the way, and so does Stephanie. At that time, I had conferences with Stephanie every single day. Then Stephanie, being the brilliant person that she is, and one of the things that I said to Stephanie is I said, Stephanie, in your lifetime, in your experience, you have experienced every type of difficulty that you will experience in your field. Not every specific difficulty, but every type of difficulty. And in your life, you have experienced everything that you need to find a cure to save Tom. You've got that, you've got it, you've experienced it, you know it's there. And that inspired her to find a cure for an uncurable disease, illness, a superbug.
Amazing.
Tom, in that 8-month period, went into septic shock 7 times.
Oh my God.
Well, Tom was on death's door. Mm-hmm. My involvement, now, I have to tell you, I am not the star of the show. This was a project done around the world by some of the greatest minds on the planet. The doctors at the eventually Tom left Germany and came back to California to the teaching hospital that they all work out of. And it was those genius doctors, as well as several other scientists working in collusion with Stephanie and other scientists to find the cure. Stephanie narrowed the cure down to 3 different processes. And once again, I had these private conversations via Skype with Stephanie every day. And Stephanie has a mind like, you know, Sheldon Cooper in that program, The Big Bang Theory?
Yes, sure.
Stephanie has that kind of brain. And every day after I would give Stephanie my report, she would give me feedback on what I had told her about what was going on over the past several days. So she was giving me my critique every day. I'm not humble about this, but I want to be, but I'm not. Marcy, I've always known that I had a talent. Mm-hmm. I've always known it. I always known I was good. Getting that feedback every day in an area that I had no experience in, the medical field, getting that feedback blew me away. I never realized that I was that good.
Well, it took you a completely different level. And
it took me to a whole different level.
Yeah, energetically, you know, the connection became stronger and stronger with every
Absolutely.
Exposure. Sure.
Absolutely. So, but the other thing that happened too is that while I do, when I say I take risk, I'll put myself out on a limb, you know, and take a risk in making a psychic statement, you know, like if I'm doing a call-in show, oh, hi, Mary. Yeah. If you put your hand over the table that's in front of you. Yeah. Yeah. Is that where it got burned last night? I'll take a risk and blow that. Mm-hmm. Okay, but in my lifetime, I had never said, okay, well, you need to do this and this and this, and then you'll be healed. Right. Well, I would never do that.
Certainly paid off for Tom, didn't it?
Here's how it happened, though.
And I just need to bring your awareness.
Are we just about over?
We have only just a few moments.
Okay,
which I'm so sad about. But
okay. There could be a sequel.
Yes, there could.
We could say, all right, we'll pick this up on the next on the sequel. But all right, let me see how fast I can finish it. So anyway, getting back to the superbug, Stephanie narrowed it down to three different things. And then she ran it by me. And she started off with, and she told me about one. The first one was called phages. When she told me phages, I said, that's it. That's the one. And she said, well, let me tell you about the other two. And I said, that's the one, Stephanie. And she said, let me tell you about the other two. And I said, that's the one, Stephanie. And she said, I'm telling you about the other two. And she did. And when she finished telling me about the other two, I said, that's the first one, is the one. And then she said, why? And I said, because the phages are like little Pac-Man, and they'll go into Tom's body and they will attack and eat and kill the superbug. And Stephanie said, wow, that's exactly what it's supposed to do. And on that was she made her decision. Marcy, do you know what phages are? Marcy?
Go ahead. Yeah, no.
Phages come from sewer water and it's excrement. Mm. And what they did, like now, there were experiments done in the 1920s, 1930s in Russia, where when people had lower bowel issues, illnesses, that they were doing this phage therapy. They were injected fresh stool.
Yes.
Into a person's body in the appropriate area. And the concept was the healthy bacteria will eat the unhealthy bacteria. There was some success with that until like the late 1930s. And then penicillin was invented and those experiments stopped. Around the world, there had been phage experiments done, but never on a human. The world community got together, found phages, put them together, and Tom got treated with phages. And
amazing.
He was the first person to survive the superbug.
And so what year was this?
2015 or 16.
Wow, amazing.
And the story is on my website too.
And what's the name of that book for everyone?
It's called The Perfect Predator. And The Perfect Predator is relating to the superbug.
Sure. It's an amazing story. And I have to say, it's so thrilling to know that you were so instrumental in bringing together the information for the treatment, and that it actually is such a pivotal point for modern medicine and giving, you know, a more conventional approach, a bit of a alternative, right? That it has become now much more commonplace, but it's really amazing.
Can I just
an extraordinary, extraordinary life.
Can I just, that was the greatest, that was the loudest thing I did because I've done. But there are many, many things of equal magnitude that just didn't get written about.
Well, and that's the way it is. But it doesn't make any of the others less significant.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, this is
because each one to each person is really life changing.
Yes.
So, you know, you mentioned your website.
Yes.
Robert, we do have to close out, and I want people to know how to reach you. They're going to have so many questions for you.
Great. RobertLindsayMilne.com.
Well, that's easy enough, but that's I am going to ask you to spell it because there will be some people who will not be seeing this show page and will just be listening to the podcast. So go ahead.
R-O-B-E-R-T. LindsayMilne. That sounded poetic, didn't it?
Yes, it did. .com.
.com. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
And can they also contact you on your website to
absolutely
book any
absolutely
meetings?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And on my website, there is a link to a show where Stephanie, Tom, and I talked about, and we met for the first time after all this was said and done, the book and everything, we got together and we talked about what happened and the psychic part and how the psychic part affected Tom and how he was saved by it.
Well, I can't wait to share that and I can't wait to watch it.
Great.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here and really just speaking so openly.
Thank you.
And sharing your heart and sharing your obvious passion, which I love so much.
Thank you.
And Robert, you have graced our stage today.
Thank you. I feel honored.
Yeah. Honored to have had you here.
Thank you.
So again, thank you so much for being here. Thank you to our audience for giving us your time, your energy, your focus, and of course, those beautiful hearts of yours. And so until next time, I, of course, am Marcy Newman, your host, and we have had the most wonderful time with Robert Lindsay Milne, and it's just been fantastic. Thank you. Bye-bye now.